New Year from everyone here at Gerwick.net. Thank you for dialing in and listening to another edition of the Steve Gerwick Show. It is Wednesday, January the 2nd, 2013. I hope everybody's having a great new year. And we've got a lot of different topics discussed again today here on the Steve Gerwick Show. You might detect in my voice I have been a little bit under the weather. I do have a list of things I want to get into, but also want to talk about real issues as well. And I know it's kind of a potpourri show that I do with the Steve Gerwick Show, but there's a number of topics that I do want to discuss, a lot of things that are on my mind. Obviously, the big push right now is for gun control in the United States based on what happened at Sandy Hook. But before the school shootings, there was definitely an agenda and a push to ban guns. They're going to go after your semi-automatics. They're going to go after pretty much all guns at some point, and it looks like Feinstein's going to be pushing that in the Senate, so we'll talk a little bit about gun control and the school shooting. I want to talk about the journalist, the integrity of some of the journalists that reported on the Sandy Hook shootings and some of the inconsistencies with the reports that were coming out, because I remember, you know, that day I had heard so many different versions of the story, and it reminded me a lot of the Osama bin Laden shooting. How many different variations of the same story could they give us? The narrative kept changing. You know, with this shooter, first the shooter had shot himself, nobody was killed, and then I remember hearing that the mother was an employee of the school, and it sounded like he had got inside the school to shoot his mother. So the narrative had changed. Obviously, they reported the name wrong. It was his brother they originally reported. So I want to get into a little bit about Sandy Hook, the shooting itself, and the poor journalist out there with sloppy coverage of this tragic event. And so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So before we do that, I do want to get into pro wrestling. We have, of course, our predominantly a pro wrestling website, but here on Gerwick.net and specifically my show, I don't want to be limited just pro wrestling, but I do want to start with some pro wrestling discussion to kick off the show. A lot of things on my mind. First and foremost, with Gerwick.net, I definitely encourage you to keep voting on the 2012 Gerwick.net year-end awards. And we've already closed out a few polls, and you can still vote currently as we do this show. I just put up the latest category, which is the Jabroni of the Year. Yes. Hard to limit it down to just one Jabroni of the Year. I don't know. Maybe some of you think it's a very easy Jabroni of the Year, but currently you can vote for the Jabroni of the Year. We currently have New Jack for saying that Jerry Lawler deserved to die following his heart attack. Tammy Lynn Sitch, Sonny, 5 arrests in 1 month. That's pretty hard to beat. The Hulk Hogan sex tape. We had the Honky Tonk Man talking that Jerry Lawler's heart attack was a work. We had the Warrior who was going on a rant about Hulk Hogan's sex tape. We have the usual Kurt Angle Twitter rants, including I remember one where he said that his account had been hacked, and of course he wasn't responsible for anything that was posted on his Twitter page. And then there was most recently the Vader incident with Harley Race. So you can vote for who do you think is the Jabroni of the Year. And you can vote now currently at Gerwick.net, as well as the DVD of the Year, which is going pretty easily towards the CM Punk Best in the World. So you can go up there and vote for which DVD you thought was the DVD of 2012. Now, I want to get into some of the awards that have already been decided. And, of course, we still have the story of 2012. You can still give us your suggestions on which stories you thought were or what was the biggest story in 2012 in professional wrestling. We'll, of course, do that poll very soon. And, of course, we still have to do the 2012 Gerwick.net Wrestler of the Year. Now, we did the Female Wrestler of the Year, which was easily won by AJ Lee. Actually, I should probably preference by saying it's the female of the year rather than a female wrestler of the year, because some of the ladies, like Vicky Guerrero, doesn't wrestle, and really AJ Lee doesn't wrestle all that much. Of course, she had the prominent storyline this year of being the general manager after her love triangle with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. So she won very easily the female of the year, 54%. To Miss Tessa Mockers, 10%, and then from there, everybody else got single digits. The tag team of the year went to Team Hell No, an easy one here with 50% of the vote. Second place was Daniels and Kazarian, got 15%, and then the rest of the teams got less than 10%, got single digits. The breakout star of the year, which was actually a category we did not run in 2011, and I want to thank Atlee Green for suggesting this category. This poll was won by Rayback with 25% of the vote. Daniel Bryan got 22%, AJ Lee 17%, Austin Aries at 13%, Antonio Cesaro got 10%, and then there everybody else got less than 10% or single digits. Could not, hard to argue that one. This has definitely been Ryback's year, and we're going to see where they go with Ryback in 2013. Do you think it's time to put the strap on Ryback and give him the run? We'll definitely like your opinion on that. The TV show of 2012, it's won every year we've done this poll since 2005, was the first Gerwick.net year-end awards. Raw won again easily, 51% to Impact's 24%. ROH on Sinclair, interestingly enough, got third place or finished in third place with 12%. Actually beat out WWE's main event at 8%. And Friday Night SmackDown got slapped down in the final equation here in the voting with just 5% of the vote. And I remember years past that SmackDown would do similar numbers to Raw. Not obviously, Raw has won pretty easily every year, but there were years where SmackDown would get a lot of votes in the year-end awards for the TV show of the year, but not this year. And you saw very easily, again, Raw won for the television show of 2012. What do you think about that? Are you one that voted for Raw as the TV show of the year? or did you vote with another show? Now, I think a lot of people think that the ROH on Sinclair is the best TV show, weekly TV show. The problem is, not everybody gets a chance to see it. It's not on a national cable network such as USA or Spike TV. I would love to see Ring of Honor get a national TV clearance on one of the major cable networks. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. Obviously, Sinclair bought into ROH, so obvious that ROH runs their television show on Sinclair. Now, Sinclair has cleared more markets, but it's still not available in 100% of the TV markets. I know in my area, I still have no Sinclair television show, so thus, the only way I get a chance to see Ring of Honor is on the internet, which is where I think predominantly most of the wrestling fans are checking it out, although there are definitely those that are checking out the shows on their local TV stations, if you do have one in your area. But, you know, there's certainly those out there that think that the Ring of Honor TV show is the best weekly TV show. Now, there's also a, just by judging from opinions I received, comments, you know, on the boards, that this was not one of the better years for Ring of Honor, that the product had suffered a little bit in 2012. I know there's some people who don't think that Kevin Steen is necessarily a Ring of Honor type champion, but we did see Ring of Honor overall do very well in the year-end awards, again, coming in third place, a strong finish there for the television show. Let's go back to the awards, and the announcer of the year went to JBL. I think he definitely had a strong year as well, JBL returning to the broadcast booth. Jerry the King Lawler, I think maybe sentimental votes here based on what happened to him on television, having a heart attack on television. But the King finished with second place, 26%. Jim Ross, who's won this category a number of times previously, 18%. And then from there, everybody got single digits, including Michael Cole at 9%. The promotion of the year, and again, this is one that's gone to the WWE every year. WWE won the promotion of the year with 61% of the vote. TNA got 20%. ROH got 10% of the vote. And then from there, everybody else got single-digit percentages, including New Japan at 6% of the vote. The pay-per-view of the year, I thought this one was kind of interesting. I thought there would be some secondary pay-per-views that would do stronger in this particular poll, but it did go to WrestleMania 28, got 51% of the vote. Obviously, the biggest spectacle of the year, the biggest promoted show. WrestleMania still has a name, WrestleMania. So 51% there for once-in-a-lifetime Cena versus The Rock, although as we do this show, it's a possibility we could see Rock Cena too. TLC came in second place with 14% of the vote. Of course, that was the last pay-per-view offering of WWE in 2012. Extreme Rules did 11% of the vote. And from there, everybody else got less than 10%, including Bound for Glory, the TNA pay-per-view, or I should say probably their biggest show of the year, did 8% of the vote. And then we had the worst pay-per-view of the year. Now, this poll just closed today. Some very interesting voting here, and it went really down between two pay-per-views, one a WWE offering and then a TNA pay-per-view offering. In a way, I was hoping the TNA pay-per-view wouldn't win because then people would say, well, this is only a WWE poll. But the WWE pay-per-view actually got the worst pay-per-view of the year, with Hell in the Cell beating out TNA's Victory Road 20-19%. Very close voting, and much of the voting, it was tied. It would go back and forth, one or two votes either way. But in the end, Hell in the Cell won this poll with 20% of the vote. No Way Out got 11%, Genesis got 10%, and then the rest of the pay-per-views listed got single-digit percentages. Match of the year was not John Cena versus The Rock, which was the biggest build-up match of the year, but it was The Undertaker versus Triple H, got 41% of the vote. And then the only other match that got double digits was Punk versus Bryan from Over the Limit, which got 13%. The Cena Rock match itself only got 5% of the vote, as did Punk versus Bryan from the Money in the Bank pay-per-view at 5%. Also at 5% was Davey Richards versus Michael Elgin from Showdown in the Sun, 5%. Cena versus Brock Lesnar, Extreme Rules, 5%. And then we had about, 8 or 9 matches that got less than 5% of the vote. So you can, again, check these results up at Gerwick.net. Look for the little icon that says 2012 Awards, or you can go to the top tab and look for the awards as well. You can look back at the previous awards as well. And then the other finished award of 2012 thus far was the Feud of the Year, which was won by CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan with 20% of the vote, beating out Bobby Roode and James Storm, which definitely had a great feud in 2012. CM Punk versus John Cena got 15%. John Cena versus The Rock at 14%. CM Punk versus Chris Jericho. And obviously, you might see a trend here with CM Punk doing so well here in the feuds of the year. That probably will speak well for him when we do the Wrestler of 2012 as well. But CM Punk versus Jericho at 12%. Aces and Eights versus TNA got 8%. Kane versus Daniel Bryan, 8%, and then the rest got less than 5% for the feud of the year at Gerwick.net. So, again, we encourage you to vote for currently the DVD of the year as well as the Jabroni of the year. And then we also still have the story of 2012 to be decided, as well as the wrestler of the year for 2012. Want to get into a new feature we're doing at Gerwick.net, and that is the discussion of the day. Every day we're going to put up a new topic for you to discuss, give us your thoughts and opinions on. We started the January 1st, the new year, doing this feature, and only made sense to do the 2013 predictions. So you can each day go up to Gerwick.net, check out the daily discussion topic, and then on the comment boards, go ahead and leave your comments for that particular discussion. Now, today itself, on January the 2nd, we're looking for your 2012 highlights. What did you like most about 2012? The best matches, the best angles, the best debuts, the best characters, etc. Then obviously you can probably predict what January 3rd is going to be, would be the lowlights of 2012. What didn't you like in 2012? Again, matches, angles, storylines. What were you most disappointed by? And there's a lot of things that jump out at me, but I'm not going to say anything until we run that daily discussion. And what I encourage you as well, you can either tweet me or Facebook me or message me what you think would make a good topic for the daily discussion. So we're definitely looking forward to your opinions and your input on this new feature at Gerwick.net, the daily discussion. And we're only on the second day, but we're looking forward to a lot of discussions pertaining to the world of professional wrestling. We definitely encourage you to leave us your thoughts, and as well as leave us your suggestions on what you'd like to see discussed in a daily discussion. So definitely check that out all at Gerwick.net. Cheap plug there. www.gerwek.net. Gerwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web since 1997 for all your pro wrestling news, results, archives of TV ratings going back to 1997. The awards go back to 2005. We started doing the Hall of Fame in 2007. That takes me to the next topic here. In December, we closed out the voting for the candidate for the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame. It was Taz, and he did not get the necessary 70% of the vote to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. That was controversial to some. Some people thought for sure, based on his career in the ring, that he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. And then there was others that didn't see him as a Hall of Famer. Obviously, he didn't get the necessary 70% of the vote. Personally, I will say that I did not vote for Taz for the Hall of Fame. I liked Taz. I thought he was a great wrestler. I loved his promos with a towel over the head, a suplex machine, ECW champion. Obviously lost a lot of momentum once he went to WWE. He got hurt, became an announcer. Great promo guy, a very good worker, but I never saw Taz as a Hall of Famer. So I will admit in my voting that I did vote no for Taz for the Hall of Fame. He got 60% of the vote. 70% is required to be a member of the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame or be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And as always, I want to encourage you as well, who should be on the ballot? You can go up to the website now and look for the Webmaster Inductions. Those were the original five members I put in, or actually six, because we put in the Road Warriors, the Legion of Doom. And I also want to make note that there's been a number of wrestlers that have been voted, didn't receive the required 70% of the vote to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And if you're looking for that list, we put it up on the Taz poll results, but you can also see it up at the Webmaster Inductions page at the bottom where it says fail to be inducted. We've got Chris Benoit, 62% in December of 2007. Triple H at 65% in June of 2008. Lita, 57% October 2008. Honky Tonk Man, 64%. Yes, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time got 64% in March of 2009. Scott Hall, 55% in June of 2009. Demolition, Axe and Smash, 64% in September of 2009. Ultimate Warrior, 47% in November of 2009. In December of 2009, Goldberg only got 47% of the vote. Earl Hebner, 47% in February of 2010. Rey Mysterio got 56%. December of 2010, October of 2011, Brian Pillman came close, but only got 66% of the vote. Rob Van Dam got 66% of the vote in May of 2011, and Jeff Jarrett last year in November failed to get in. He received 54% of the vote, and then for this year, Batista got 27% of the vote in January of 2012. China only got about a third of the vote at 32% in June. And then Taz failed to be voted in with 60% of the vote in December of 2012, last month. Now, for those that did receive the required 70% of the vote, you can go to Hall of Fame, tab across the top, and click on the 2012 inductions. And those are the wrestlers that did receive the required 70% of the vote. And I'm happy to say I agree with all the members of the Hall of Fame for 2012, including Stan Hansen, Vader, Edge, AA Arn Anderson, the great Stu Hart, Miss Elizabeth got 81% of the vote. Classy Freddie Blassie, who did 88%. Dory Funk Jr., great NWA champion, now a trainer down in Florida, got 79%, was voted in. JBL got 72%, voted into the Hall of Fame. And the last inductee, inducted on November the 30th, 2012, Ultimo Dragon, was 72% of the vote. So, again, congratulations to the class of Hall of Fame 2012, Gerwick.net, and thank you, the readers and followers of Gerwick.net, for making it possible. We appreciate your votes. We appreciate your suggestions. And again, we're taking your suggestions for the February voting, because in January, we're throwing it out for Jerry Lynn. Do you think Jerry Lynn belongs in the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame? And, of course, Jerry Lynn is wrapping up his great career, and we want your opinion. Do you think Jerry Lynn, former WCW wrestler, ECW, WWF, WWE, Japan, do you think Jerry Lynn, the great Jerry Lynn, belongs in the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame? Go to Gerwick.net right now and vote. Let us know what you think. A couple other wrestling topics here. Ratings. the ratings obviously were down for WWE, and they're down, way down, especially with Raw, down to what, 1997 low for ratings. And I know a lot of people on the comment board were putting that it was the holidays, people weren't watching the show. Obviously, it was December 24th, which was Christmas Eve, and then they did a tape show for Christmas, or actually a New Year's Eve. So people were putting that the viewership was down because of the holidays. And then it was interesting to see the Impact number, a tape show during the holidays, actually did a little bit higher than the previous week. So that kind of debunked that thought. But alarming numbers for WWE, especially with the Raw numbers, since they've expanded to 3 hours. And I will be breaking down the numbers very shortly. Once we have all the numbers for 2012, I'll break it down for you and let you know exactly how Raw did for the year versus last year, and as well as Impact and SmackDown. But I can tell you, they didn't do very good in 2012. Not a good year for ratings, not a good year for pay-per-view numbers. We saw TNA eliminate a couple pay-per-views, which I think is good, but definitely speaks to, I guess, validates some of the numbers you hear for TNA pay-per-views. Now, I remember Dixie Carter doing a conference call where she was asked about the numbers being reported, and really the only reporter or journalist that posts the numbers is Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And commonly you'll see a TNA pay-per-view do between 10 and 20,000 pay-per-view buys. Now, you might see occasionally they bump up to 30, but generally the range is between 10 and 20,000 pay-per-views buys. And I remember Dixie Carter saying that she didn't dispute the numbers, but they weren't not always accurate. Obviously, if the numbers were strong, they would put out word that the numbers were strong. And obviously, the numbers, maybe Dave Meltzer's numbers are a little bit off, but they're probably not off that much. And as a result, you're seeing TNA eliminate a couple of pay-per-views, which is good. Love to see WWE eliminate a couple of pay-per-views as well. And you're looking for the schedule for 2013. We do have it up at gerwick.net. And of course, as the dates fill out and locales are announced, we'll definitely let you know as that list is up at, if you go to the pay-per-view section at gerwick.net and look on the schedule for 2013, you can see where the pay-per-views are going to be, and which a couple of them, again, we've mentioned this before, a couple of the TNA pay-per-views have been eliminated, which I think is a move in the right direction. We'd love to see them go down maybe 6 pay-per-views a year and build them up every 2 months. Build them up. I think ideally you maybe go down even 4 pay-per-views for the year. Just use your big ones. You know, use your Bound for Glory, Turning Point, or actually I guess Destination X has become one of their bigger pay-per-views because they're running the Alamo Dome, Victory Road, and you just use the main, you know, 4 pay-per-views for the year as your pay-per-views and kind of build up to those shows. See if that will spike the numbers for pay-per-view buys. But again, I think TNA moving in the right direction by eliminating a couple of the pay-per-views in 2013. A couple other things to mention as well. Ric Flair getting the itch to wrestle again. He did an interview with Mark Madden talking that he would not mind wrestling again in WWE. Personally, I do not want to see Ric Flair wrestle again. Nothing personal against Ric Flair. I've always been a big Ric Flair guy, but I don't want to see him wrestle in 2013. Same thing for Hulk Hogan, who's getting that itch as well to go back to the ring. The guy can barely walk to the ring, let alone, I mean, we don't want to see him wrestle. I mean, that's the bottom line. He did reject an offer in Mexico. Let's hope he's consistent with that and does not want to wrestle in a a TNA ring or a WWE ring. If something happens at the end of the year and he's out, I don't want to see him return to a WWE ring or a TNA ring. I think we've seen enough of Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. Great wrestlers, deserve the accolades, but at the end of the day, I do not want to see them wrestle ever again. And I think I'm probably in the majority there. So, again. But again, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. We're going to come back with some NFL discussion as well as the Sandy Hook shootings.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life. When it comes crashing down and it hurts inside, gotta lend a hand, it don't help to hide. If you hurt my friends, then you hurt my pride. I gotta take a stand, no, I can't let it slide.
I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right.
Thank you, Rick Derringer, and what a great song that is, Real American. And honestly, we've heard the song played, a different version for Hulk Hogan's WWE theme song, entrance theme, for many of years. And just recently, I came across that particular, I guess it's the original version, and it just blows me away. It's just a great song, and if it doesn't pump you up, it doesn't make you feel like a great American, it's just like one of the most patriotic songs I've ever heard. And just we've grown accustomed to listening to it as the entrance theme for Hulk Hogan, but that was a great tune, and I definitely encourage you to check that out. The Rick Derringer, the original Real American song, tremendous tune, and it definitely fires you up. You know, fight for the rights of every man, and you know, I hear that, and it just makes me think of, you know, what's going on with the fight over the Second Amendment. It's part of the Constitution, you know, regardless of what you feel about gun control. I mean, it is part of the Constitution. The Second Amendment is not for hunting rights. It's to protect you against a tyrannical government, which is what we have here. We have a government that ships guns to Mexico to blame the Second Amendment as part of the Fast and Furious. We have a government that's working with Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya. We have a government that insider trades We have a government that passes NDAA to secretly arrest us. We have a government that spies on us through our emails and listens to our conversations over the phone, that spies on us through our televisions and our computers and our smartphones. We have a government that will put black boxes in our cars to always track us. And they also have shutdown devices as well. They can shut down your automobile. That'll be coming out in future years with your cars. So look for that. Yeah, if you like your freedoms to be trampled on, this is definitely the tyrannical government that the founding fathers warned against. That's why we need a Second Amendment to protect ourselves. If they get the guns, we're basically slaves. We're financial slaves because they can print the money out of thin air and ruin us that way. And then they take our guns, and how do we fight it? How do we fight back? I think it's pretty obvious looking at the voting data that the voting polls have been rigged. They put in the people they want to rig. And even if Romney would have won, wouldn't have mattered too much because they're controlled by the two-party system in the United States is controlled by the same mega banks that make up the Federal Reserve, and they destroy us. They're destroying our Constitution. But I didn't mean to get into this rant, but just listening to that tune, Real American, fight for the rights of every man. And again, a great song by Rick Derringer. I want to get into the NFL, and what a transition that is, right? But Monday was Black Monday, and there were a number of coaches fired on Monday. I want to give you my thoughts on that. The Cardinals fired Ken Wisenhunt. 45-51 overall. Wisenhunt, of course, made it to the Super Bowl, but lost to the Steelers. The Bills fired Shane Gailey. I don't think that was much of a surprise. The big surprise for me really was Lovie Smith, 10-6. I guess the detractors will say that he was 7-1 and then finished at 10-6, which meant the second half of the season he went 3-5. And that wasn't good enough. They only made the playoffs, once in 6 years in Chicago? That's not enough. That's not going to get it done. So Lovie Smith is an axed. Andy Reid, no surprise there. 13 years is a long time to coach one team in the NFL. He's out. Of course, there's all kinds of rumors that he won't be out of a job for very long. Kansas City fired Romeo Crennel after only one season, 2-14. San Diego fired Norv Turner after 6 years. No surprise there. I'm really surprised he lasted that long, to be honest with you. I believe it was the third straight year they didn't qualify for the playoffs. And Cleveland, with new ownership, fired Pat Shurmur after only two seasons. They let Mike Holmgren go, or I guess he quit, forced out the door as the team boss there. A couple of jobs that were saved that kind of surprised me, I thought would be that you'd see in play, was the Jacksonville job, 2-14 there. Mike Mularkey, I thought, would get axed, and they have new ownership in Jacksonville. They're reportedly going to hire a general manager, which means at some point the new general manager came in, will come in and say, maybe I don't want Mike Mularkey as my coach, and so his job, I think, is still up in the air. Ron Rivera surprised me, but he did have a strong finish to 2012, saved his job at 7-9. At least for now. These are always subject to change. If somebody pops up that another team really, really wants, we'll see if there's other coaching changes. Now, the one that really should have been fired, in my opinion, Jim Schwartz in Detroit, 4-12, 0-6 in the division, and lost 8 straight. The last win was Week 9 when they beat Jacksonville, a pitiful team. This was a team that was a playoff team, 10-6 last year, played the Saints in the playoffs. Big time disappointment. They have Matthew Stafford, who you're seeing on clothing commercials. They have Calvin Johnson, who nearly had 2,000 yards receiving. You have Dominican Sue, a dominating defensive tackle. And in the end, they had some injuries in the secondary, but overall, their main stars, their main players, were healthy in 2012. They did not lose a left tackle. And at the end of the day, they lost 8 straight, and somehow Jim Schwartz keeps his job. I guess it really is no surprise from an organization that kept Matt Millen, probably the worst executive in professional sports history, for as long as they did. So, why should we be surprised that Jim Schwartz, I think his record overall is 22-42 or something like that, 4-24 in the division, is retained, and they actually gave him an extension, contract extension through 2015 last year after his successful 2011 campaign where they made the playoffs. But you know, the Detroit Lions are the Detroit Lions because ownership, no accountability. They've kept coaches too long. They've kept executives too long. I think Martin Mayhew there in Detroit, a lot of questionable draft choices there, including Riley Reiff in the first round. Pettigrew, I don't think, has worked out with that first-round selection for a tight end. So thought there could possibly be a change in Detroit, but then again, it is Detroit, so no surprise there. Dallas's collapse, I like to say it was a surprise, but not really. Tony Romo again choked and again cost the Dallas Cowboys a chance to make the playoffs. They had the great opportunity. You win the division and you get a home game. You know, sometimes the final week you need to win just to make it to the playoffs, such as the Vikings needed to beat Green Bay just to make the playoffs, just to play them again in the next round, this time at Lambeau Field. Here's a great opportunity for Dallas to beat their divisional rival and win the division, get the 4 seed. And for some reason, they didn't get it done. And you saw Tony Romo and Dallas again choke. They did not make the playoffs. And yet, again, Tony Romo kept his job there in Dallas. Also wanted to mention with going back to the Vikings, Adrian Peterson came very close to beating Eric Dickerson's record. Got just under 2,100 yards. 2,105 is the record for Eric Dickerson. Disappointing that he didn't get it. He got so close, and it was funny to watch him because I don't think he realized how close he really was until Pam Oliver said, "Oh, you're so close! Like what, 9 yards from getting the record?" But he came up a little bit short. I wanted to mention as well, the challenge flag again came up with Mike McCarthy in that Viking game where it was a scoring play and Mike McCarthy threw the flag. It was actually a turnover / scoring play, which those plays are automatically reviewed. He threw his challenge flag. We saw this in Detroit with Jim Schwartz. He threw his flag and he was penalized. Not only got a 15-yard penalty, but they also eliminated the review. So he didn't get his review. It would have been an easy review. It would have been, Houston was on their side of the field, so it would have eliminated a six-point touchdown, obviously. But he threw his challenge flag, and as a result, he could not get the challenge and get the review that they needed to reverse that call. So there you had a situation where a coach lost his challenge, which should have been the automatic review because he threw his challenge flag. And it nearly happened again with Mike McCarthy. You saw one of the Green Bay players pick up that flag and like, "Coach, you can't challenge that play," which was a smart play. This time they said the review was initiated upstairs before the flag was thrown, so he just got a 15-yard penalty. So that was a very lucky break for Green Bay there. Yet in the end, Green Bay lost, and that eliminated, you know, as a result, the domino effect. Green Bay loses, Chicago is eliminated, Lovie Smith is fired, and the Vikings make the playoffs. 6 seed rematch with Green Bay this weekend at Lambeau Field, which should be very interesting. Also, I didn't get a chance to cover this previously, but Roger Goodell's idea of eliminating the kickoff. I don't know if people have heard this idea. I think it's one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. And maybe I shouldn't be surprised because this is Roger Goodell. But he was talking about eliminating the kickoff. So you would score a touchdown, right? You score your touchdown. And then the ball is put on your own 30-yard line and it's 4th and 15, which means you can either go for it or punt. So theoretically, the team that just scored a touchdown could go for it and the kickoff. The whole idea is to eliminate the kickoff, which is one of the most exciting plays in football. So I don't, you know, they've pushed the kickoff back, so it has increased the number of touchbacks because they are trying to eliminate injuries. I understand that. But at the same time, the kickoff is one of the most exciting plays. You have kickoff specialists. You got guys who thrive on kickoff coverage, or returners like a Devin Hester, who I saw the other day say that if, you know, with Lovie Smith being fired, he may actually retire. Now, I'd be surprised if he retires, but, you know, suddenly those kick returners, Josh Cribbs, if they would eliminate the kickoff, suddenly their value to a team would be greatly lowered, because what would you need a kick returner for? Especially for, I mean, a kick return is an opportunity to get great field position and occasionally, you know, break one for a big score. But, you know, Roger Goodell has had a lot of brainchilds that need to be aborted, to be blunt about it, including more and more games to London. Let's hope they don't go in that direction. And, of course, it seemed like they're pushing for a team eventually to be in London, which I think would be a disastrous idea. But I think this year there's going to be two games in London versus just one this past season. But I don't want to see that. I don't want to see the kickoff eliminated, and I do not want to see more and more games in London. I do not want to see the Super Bowl in London. I do not want to see an expansion team in London or an existing franchise move to London. You got to get a team in Los Angeles. It's mind-boggling that we used to have what the Rams and the Raiders were in Los Angeles, and now you can't. There's no teams in Los Angeles. And I know there's been talk that maybe they move the Jags to Los Angeles, or maybe the Raiders would go back to Los Angeles, or the Chargers would move from San Diego to Los Angeles, even Buffalo Bills, because they don't draw real well. But you just got to get a team in Los Angeles. One of the existing teams would have to move there, and I'm not sure which team it should be. You hate to see a team lose, or a city lose its team, but really one of the biggest, you know, what top television market has no NFL team. That's alarming, and that should be something that should be corrected with Roger Goodell as the commissioner of the NFL. Now, I do want to mention as well, on Twitter, you can follow me. I'm at Gerwick on Twitter, and I'm also at Steve Gerwick, Steve Gerwick. That is my personal Twitter page, which I am not doing any wrestling discussion on that page, and going to get into fighting the New World Order. And if that's something that would be interested to you, you can follow me there. So twitter.com/Steve Gerwick, all one word, and you can follow me there. Love to have you there and interacting with me, fighting the New World Order, the real New World Order, not Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan, but the real New World Order that we're fighting on a daily basis for our freedoms and our liberties in this country, and really worldwide, to be honest with you, because they're coming after all the countries. They implode the countries. They take them over. They control the bureaucrats, control the leaders. The leaders are bought and paid for. And this is the reason we're in the boat that we're in. And so many countries have suffered the same fate as well. So if you are against the New World Order, if you're against NDAA, if you're against Fast and Furious insider training, UN control of our troops, shutting down power plants for global warming, if you're against fluoride in the water, chemtrails, vaccines, if you're against the Department of Homeland Security buying 1.4 billion rounds of bullets, if you're against Al-Qaeda being supported by the United States in Libya and Syria, if you're against the U.S. government shipping or growing opium in Afghanistan and shipping the drugs in, and laundering the money through the banks, if you're against the TSA, if you're against drones, if you're against FEMA camps, re-education centers in the United States, veterans being put on watch lists as terrorist threat, people putting on no-fly lists, possible gun bans, then yeah, if you're against Obamacare, QE3, open borders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Definitely follow me at Steve Gerwick at twitter.com. Definitely like to have you as a follower. Now, I would like to get into a little bit of the inconsistencies with Sandy Hook, because it was alarming. And let me start off by saying that to wrap my mind around an individual that would go into a school and pull the trigger on defenseless children makes me sick. And I have a degree in education. I've taught children. I worked with them on a daily basis, and it just disgusts me to even consider this possibility that a deranged individual could go into a school with handguns and just start opening fire on children. And at the same time, and not to sound inconsiderate of the situation, there are so many major gaffes with this coverage of this case and the reporting on it. There's a lot of inconsistencies with what they told us on television. Now, originally, and I'm just going by my memory, and I jotted a few things down that day as we got more and more information about the shootings. This is my recollection of that day and what they were telling us happened on that day. Originally, I heard about a school shooting, and there was one suicide. I was under the impression that the shooter got into the school and shot himself. There was discrepancy with the shooter himself. I heard that the shooter was a father of one of the students at the school. We also heard that the shooter was Ryan, 24, and not the identified shooter later as Adam, 20. And now, they say that the ID found on Adam was Ryan's ID, although Ryan has said in an interview that he has had nothing to do with his brother since 2010, which begs the question, how did Adam have ID of his brother if he's not had any connection with him in two years plus? We also heard when Ryan was identified as the shooter that Ryan's girlfriend was missing and that a roommate was missing. We heard that, I heard during the day that he had shot his father. We're talking about Adam now. Adam shot his father and then went to school. And he was buzzed in, and then later we heard that he broke into the school. Of course, we heard that his mother was an employee of the school. We heard his mother was a teacher's aide at the school. We heard that he killed his mother at school, and then later it was learned that he had shot his mother at his residence and then went to school and opened fire. We heard discrepancies over the weapons. We heard that about handguns and long rifles being used. And then later we heard that the Bushmaster was actually in the vehicle, not used. So he had four handguns shooting, which begs the question, was he alone as the lone gunman if he had four handguns shooting? We did hear that their second shooter was taken into custody, or a possible second shooter. We heard them looking for an individual in the woods that later they pretty much shot down, no pun intended. Now, the one theory that he got in because he was buzzed in, and the guy had masks and he had guns and he was buzzed in, and then of course later they changed the story that he had broke into school. Very interesting that the father works for GE. GE is very closely related to the government. GE owns NBC, CNBC, and MSNBC. Very interesting tie there, I thought, when I learned that his father worked for General Electric. We heard that the mother was a prepper. We've heard a lot of people bashing preppers. People that are preparing for the worst, that they think the economic times are coming to an end. We could have a big economic downfall. We're talking about the fiscal cliff currently with the government and what's currently going on in the House and Senate. At any time, the Federal Reserve is printing money left and right, devaluing the currency. So preppers are preparing for the worst. You buy gold and you buy silver, and you buy food and water and supply them in your house in case society crumbles, civil unrest. And thus, if there's civil unrest, you need your guns. So she's had guns, she's got her food or water, her silver, light bulbs, flashlights. And it's interesting that there's actually a show, I believe, on one of the cable outlets about prepping or preppers, that they're preparing for the worst. And I don't know how you're not at least preparing somehow based on what we're seeing currently in this country with our civil rights being violated on a daily basis. They're devaluing the currency through the Federal Reserve, illegal wars, NDAA. So, and now we're talking that we may go after the guns at some point, try to ban or greatly deflate the Second Amendment. So, you know, we heard that. And then obviously, you know, what were the drugs involved? What kind of drugs was this individual on? Was he on psychotropic drugs that we commonly hear about with serial shooters, commonly on drugs? Obviously, the Batman shooter was on something, and we know the Columbine kids were on some sort of psychotropic drugs. And it seems to be a common thread, and yet, you know, we're going after the guns when we should be really examining these psychotropic drugs that we're giving our kids and giving our adults that maybe not need them. And we know that it can cause this type of behavior. Just read the labels on some of these psychotropic drugs. That should be an issue that we should be focusing on. But yet, if you watch television, look at all the ads for prescription drugs. There's a prescription drug for everything now. You know, blood pressure, cholesterol, ED. I mean, constantly during the day, you're being bombarded. Gout, just during the day, being bombarded with you know, big pharma ads. And obviously, big pharma is a big proponent of getting everybody on these prescription drugs, and you continuously to use these prescription drugs. And obviously, they're funding these networks, and the networks are not known for journalistic integrity, and thus you're getting these type of situations where is the outrage over this, the reporting of this case? And I would, if somebody that I knew was involved in the shooting and to hear this information be so muffled and so inconsistent and inaccurate, where is the outrage over the media's coverage of this case? You know, whether you feel that, you know, there was something going on that shouldn't have been going on in that day, if there really was a second shooter, if there was a third person involved, or whatever the situation was, just really poor reporting. Again, are they just trying to scoop each other and just reporting anything they hear? Or, I don't know, is the officials giving them, you know, poor information constantly? It's really alarming that so many of us count on are getting our news from the television, which is a bad situation. Obviously, there's alternative forms of news out there. Drudge Report comes to mind. If you really want to get the real information out there, you can do so. But, you know, in this situation, just the inaccuracies of the story was very alarming. And should be something that should be examined. And, you know, they should come forward and say, you know, why were there so many inconsistencies in the story? So it's a sad situation. Again, as a result, they're going more and more for the handguns. They're going for gun bans. We knew this was in the agenda previously, but now, of course, they're going to push it more and more, going for our Second Amendment. So we have to stand up to it and fight back. So, again, this has been Steve Gerwick of Gerwick.net. Again, definitely check out the polls at Gerwick.net. Vote on the year-end awards. Vote for Jerry Lynn for the Hall of Fame or nay. And go to the daily discussion section and vote for, or I should say, comment on the daily discussion. And as always, you can leave us a topic for the daily discussion as well. We definitely encourage you to do that at Gerwick.net. Again, I'm on Facebook, Steve Gerwick, and there's also a fan page at Gerwick.net on Facebook. You can like us there. Gerwick.net is the website, twitter.com/Gerwick for the Gerwick.net official Twitter, and my official page to fight the NWO, the real NWO, is twitter.com/Steve Gerwick. Again, thanks for listening. We do appreciate your support of Gerwick.net, and here's to wishing everybody a great 2013.